All right. I mentioned about the Lyme Foundation out of California, the Bay Area Lyme Foundation. We're now joined by one of the researchers with some brand new testing and some brand new information. Her name is Wendy Adams. Good morning, Wendy. How are you?
Good morning. I'm fine. Thanks.
Listen, I don't know whether you know or not, but last weekend I broke it to the audience. I guess it'd be about 10 days ago now, I did get a tick that I had to remove from my body. And so I went on the 21-day pill, like I think it's 12 pills a day I take, just as a precautionary measure. And it's happening with an alarming frequency up here in Canada. I know it is in U.S. as well. And it's all about not being sure if that tick was infected or not. And that's really the key to this whole research that you're doing down there, I understand.
Well, I think, you know, I'm sorry to hear you got bitten by a tick. I'm really glad to hear that you noticed it and that you sought medical treatment or a doctor's advice. There, you know, certainly right in the middle of tick season right now, I found one on my daughter just the other day after a visit to the dog park. So this is the time when they are out and they are questing and looking for their next meal. So I think the important thing to remember is that you need to get to a doctor quickly. And if you notice a rash or you start feeling symptoms, that you let your doctor know that as soon as possible, because we know that early treatment leads to better outcomes. And I think it's important to mention for your listeners and also for yourself, you know, many people do get a rash, but not everybody. And the rash can look very different. And so it's helpful for your doctor often if you take a picture of it and you put a ruler by it so that you measure how big it is. Because if you see that rash expanding, that's a telltale sign of a Lyme disease rash, and that can be helpful for your doctor to know.
But Wendy, that from what I understand, that's not necessarily going to happen to everybody that gets Lyme disease, is it?
No, and that's another great point, is that everybody, people have different immune responses. And so some people get a rash, some people don't. We think that the majority of people get a rash, but the people who do get a rash can have a variety of manifestations of that rash. So it can look like a bullseye rash, which is a central clearing, you know, like a target would look like. But that is an atypical rash. And so most people get somewhat of a homogeneous red rash, but that's harder for the doctors to determine whether or not it's Lyme disease or something like cellulitis, or, you know, you'll hear it often called a spider bite.
And it doesn't necessarily, that rash doesn't necessarily have to be where you were originally bitten, does it?
No, usually the first rash is, and because that is your immune system's response to this tick bite that's happened and to the spirochete, actually, that's infected. However, as the disease progresses, oftentimes a person will get multiple rashes all over their body, and that's called disseminated Lyme disease.
Yeah. And once again, I just want to caution everybody listening, that is not necessarily the case. So just because you don't get any of that evidence in the first few days or even the first few weeks does not mean that you should not treat yourself, for sure.
It's kind of scary because I got one a couple last year, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And I didn't get myself treated at all.
Yeah, I know.
So I was like,
I know.
Now I'm going to the doctors.
It's a little late now, buddy.
and I want to, can I just distinguish one thing? Some people can get a rash immediately, and that is not necessarily an infection. That is the body's response to the tick itself. So what you see is usually over, you know, days up to a month, if you get a rash then, that's more indicative of Lyme. If you get a rash immediately and it's small, then that's just a hypersensitivity to the tick bite.
Okay, so Wendy, tell me a little bit about this, the Bay Area Lyme Foundation, would you? Who exactly are you people?
Well, we are a foundation that started when, in 2011, a bunch of friends got together and determined that they had all had Lyme disease and had been misdiagnosed for many years. We live in an area where there are a lot of horses and a lot of outdoors people, much, I'm sure, like in your area, and they had been infected and misdiagnosed, including, you know, the adults and some of the children as well. And when they started looking around at what was happening in the area, they realized that really not enough research was being done. And they came together as a foundation to raise money for improved scientific research into diagnostics and therapeutics for late-stage disease.
Give me some of the, what are some of the research that you're doing?
So we are really interested in, on the diagnostic side, into direct detection diagnostics, so actually detecting the bacteria that causes Lyme. The testing that's done now is called indirect testing, and that tests for the immune response to the pathogen and not the pathogen itself. And as we know, immune responses can be highly variable, and we know that obviously from some people getting a rash, some people not. And so what we want to do is make sure that we can detect the pathogen itself. That gives doctors a lot more assuredness into the fact that that person is actually infected with that particular pathogen. And also, we want to be able to tell when people have had the pathogen eradicated. And right now, the testing we use can't tell when somebody's cured of that infection. And so we are funding research into specifically direct detection diagnostics, including using things like technologies like CRISPR, which you may have heard about, which is a new tool being used in academic and scientific research, and also next generation sequencing, which looks for the pathogen in the blood, but actually sequences the genome. So it's a very specific, very sensitive way of looking for the pathogen.
I want to talk to you about that because up here in Canada, anyways, we have very little in the way of tools and tests to really determine if and when you got it or if you have it. But I want to talk to you about that and a couple of other interesting things, too. Can you just sit tight with us for a couple of minutes? I have to take a quick break. And we'll come right back to you. Wendy Adams from Bay Area Lyme Foundation out of California has some interesting insight into Lyme disease. More journal after this on Shadergo Way. Welcome back to the program, Outdoor Journal on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. I'm Angelo Viola. He is Stephen Labadie. And, of course, we have Derek Brandeo at the helm, as per usual. On the phone with us is Wendy Adams from Bay Area Lyme Foundation in California. And it's no coincidence that she's on the program this week. I announced last week that I had been bitten. And not only myself, my grandson as well had been bitten by a tick in an area that is what is described as a hotbed for Lyme disease carrying ticks right now. In fact, I believe the numbers are 30 to 35% of the tick in the area. And I'll mention the area. It's Cornwall, Ottawa, Kingston corridor, that triangle. And apparently up to 35% of the tests coming back are proving positive. And so as a precaution, I started the treatment right away. It's a 21-day treatment. There's a dozen pills a day involved, and it's not the easiest thing to be on. But I'll tell you what, I am just thankful and glad that I was able to get on it right away. And it's more peace of mind than anything else. But Wendy and her group, they're actually trying to find ways that we can diagnose this thing much earlier, quicker, and with more positive results. Wendy, one of the things you mentioned, well, first of all, let me just tell you, up here, I told you I went to the doctor last week when I got out of the woods and told him what I thought was happening. And very honestly, this is my GP I've had for, I don't know, 35 years. He knew very little. Other than the fact he's familiar with the term Lyme disease, he really didn't know a whole lot about it. And that seems to be a widespread occurrence here in Canada. How is it south of the border?
Well, I think it greatly depends on where you are. You all are close to really endemic areas in the United States, and so you have a better chance, but not a perfect chance, of being correctly diagnosed. As we talked about, you know, there are various clinical presentations, and so doctors often have in mind a series of symptoms that they're looking for, and if you have a symptom that is different than that, then they might discount an infection, a Lyme infection, and that's unfortunate. People do have various presentations, both because people are different, but also the pathogens are different. So there are different strains of Borrelia. There are also different tick-borne pathogens that are transmitted by, can be transmitted by a single tick bite, and that can confound symptoms as well. It might also confound diagnostics. This is one of the reasons we have really concentrated on diagnostics, because doctors need better tools. But out in California, where we are, we have that same problem where many doctors don't know anything about Lyme disease. They know that it's found in California, but they don't know that they've seen a case, and they might have had a positive test for a few patients, but they haven't seen kind of hundreds or thousands of cases. I do want to mention, you know, you talked about Kingston, and one of the leading clinicians right now in Lyme is at Kingston General Hospital. He is an interventional cardiologist, which means he, among other things, he puts pacemakers in people. And he published a case series that has become very influential about people who are showing up in the emergency room with serious heart issues. Their heart electrical conduction was disturbed, and as a result, they were at risk of you know, sudden cardiac death. He was finding that these people who had been bitten by ticks were showing up to get a permanent pacemaker. They had been misdiagnosed in the emergency room. And so when he went, he saw a few of these cases and then went back and looked at the health records for other patients and realized that their emergency room was seeing a lot of these, it's called Lyme carditis cases, and they show up often in the first 2 to 4 weeks of infection, oftentimes before a test will test positive. So if you do get a tick bite and you start having cardiac symptoms, you might feel faint, you might feel dizzy, you need to get to an emergency room, and you also need to tell them you've been bitten by a tick, because Lyme carditis is a very serious manifestation. It doesn't happen in many, you know, it's less than 10% of patients, but it does usually affect males over females, and it's usually young males. So this has been shown in kids, a child who was a male at 15 years old, right? And so this is a very serious manifestation of Lyme, and if you have cardiac symptoms, then you should get to an ER immediately and tell them you've been bitten by a tick.
Wow, there's something I just learned.
That's crazy.
Cardiac connected to Lyme, that's crazy. Two things that I talked at length with my GP about. Obviously, he was all ears when I told him that I've spent the last 10 years studying this stuff, and we've had, I think, just about everybody in terms of professionals with expertise on the subject on the radio program in the last decade. So obviously he was all ears. And one of the things he brought up was rather interesting, Wendy, and that is, you know, he says, I don't understand why somebody is not working on a vaccine so that we don't have to worry about is it or isn't it or, you know, curing or not curing. Why can't we come up with a vaccine? Is that something that your group has ever looked at, Wendy?
Well, I would say that vaccines are very people are looking at them, and actually there is a vaccine in clinical trials. There was a vaccine that was approved in the late 1990s. It was withdrawn from the market, and the way that the vaccine works is not the way a traditional vaccine works. The vaccine worked in patients by prohibiting the dissemination of Borrelia, of Lyme disease, from the tick to the human. So I think, and people are working on a similar vaccine that uses that same mechanism that's in clinical trials right now. What we know now that we didn't know then is that we have different strains of Borrelia. One, for example, called Borrelia miyamotoi, and that is slightly different, and it's different enough that vaccine wouldn't work for that particular pathogen. And so, like in California where I live, in many of the parks there is more of this Borrelia miyamotoi than there is Borrelia burgdorferi. And so that's a little bit of an issue. We need something that protects against more strains and not just Burgdorferi. But the other thing is that we have these other tick-borne pathogens that can be transmitted by a tick, and those include Babesia, which is like a parasite like malaria, and Anaplasma, which is another bacteria. There are also viruses called there's Powassan virus. And those are also very serious. What some researchers are evaluating now is an anti-tick vaccine. So this is something that would prevent the tick from feeding and therefore prevent it from transmitting the pathogen. And so those are different avenues that people are pursuing for vaccines, and vaccines are, the greatest healthcare improvement probably that's been made in the last 60, 70 years. But so far for Lyme disease, is difficult to create a vaccine for because of those particular reasons.
The dogs have a Lyme disease prevention thing. They either shots or you put it around your collar.
Yeah.
What's the do you know the difference between that and making that for humans?
Well, I would say there are a couple different vaccines on the market now for dogs, and the second one that just came on the market is one that protects against other strains, like I talked about, this Miyamotoi strain. And so that is being looked at for humans. But obviously, it's a lot easier to get something approved for dogs than it is for humans. And so these things take a while.
One final question I've got before we cut you loose. One of the things that we discussed, my doctor and I, when I went in, I said to him, I just wish I had have kept the ticks, and that way there, we could have checked them out, and I guess you could probably tell from them whether they were carriers or not. And he says, well, that sounds like a great idea, except for one problem. He says, where would you take it to get it checked? And he was right. I don't know about your area, but I don't even know where I would start to find out where I would take this thing.
Yes, and so that's a really great point, is that you can get your tick checked by certain labs that do this as a service, where you send them a tick and they send you back a report, usually in inside of a week, to tell you what pathogens they found in that. So that is an option. I'm not sure, to be honest. I know there are ones in the U.S. I'm just not sure. I'm assuming they do Canadian ticks, but I'm actually not sure. But I can send you the information if you want to put on your website for a few different labs that do that.
If you wouldn't mind, that would be great. That would be great for us.
Bay Area Lyme has sponsored a free tick testing study where citizen scientists who just find ticks can send them to our researcher. He's not our particular researcher, but we fund his work at Northern Arizona University, and he is collecting all this information about the ticks that people send to him. In our last study, he had almost 20,000 ticks sent to him, and he tested for the pathogens in them, and then he published on that. And what he found was, not surprisingly, lots of different pathogens and lots of different ticks, and pathogens in ticks where they weren't supposed to be. So we think that those tick testing services provide not only a service to the people who have been bitten, but also for people who want to collect ticks and send them to a study like ours. It really helps scientists understand what's going on in a large number of ticks in a short amount of time.
Because I don't think we have anybody up here that we can send the stuff to. So, yeah, if you could give us any information in that area, we'll pass it on to all of our listeners for sure that may think they may have come in contact with a tick. I don't know whether you know this or not, but I was asked this just today, actually. Do these ticks fly?
No, ticks do not fly, but they can jump onto people as they walk by, right? But more importantly, they sense when you're brushing up against them, and they They sense the CO2 and they try and get as close to the top of the grass, and then to, you know, if you brush against the grass, they can, you know, catch a ride. What we do know is that certain types of ticks, one called the Lone Star tick, which is different than the tick that passes Lyme disease, the Lone Star tick is a more aggressive feeder. So it will, it actually has eyes, and it will search out its prey more so than most ticks that just are opportunistic feeders. They wait for something to come to them. So the Lone Star tick is something that's a little more more aggressive and looks to bite humans more often than the other ticks.
But does not carry Lyme, right?
It is not thought to actually transmit Lyme disease, but it has been found. There have been studies where Borrelia species have been found in those ticks. So again, it's hard to say it never happens, but the evidence we have now says that it doesn't happen, and if it does, it happens rarely.
So I know I said that was the last question, but I do have one more I have to ask. So as I mentioned last week when I announced this latest trauma in my life, I was wearing three layers of clothing, and a couple of them were tucked in, and the outer layer was a rain jacket. So, like, I was well protected. These things they must be able to jump from, you know, long distances or something, because I have no idea, other than the fact that he might or it might have gone down my the back of my neck or something and finally crawled down there and got through the layers. I don't know. But it's something we need to be aware of, because I know we've been spewing here for years. When you go in the outdoors, you know, make sure that you wear long pants and tuck them in and all that. Well, I got news for you. It didn't work in my case. So one thing that used to work here, and we unfortunately have all but completely taken it out of our environment, was DEET. And I know, scientifically speaking, it's still the only known product that actually repels ticks. But we can't use it up here, or we can't use it in the quantities that we need. And it's maybe just a coincidence, but there's a correlation between when we got rid of DEET and when we started talking about ticks and Lyme disease. How about down in your area?
Well, I think there are a few things. Number one, just regarding your, you know, it sounds like you're doing great preventative measures. There are a few other things you can do. As soon as somebody comes in after being in a tick environment, if you throw your clothes in the dryer and put them on high heat, has to be high, can't be just warm, for 10 minutes, that will fix. You don't want to just throw them in the washer and wash them for a half an hour and then throw them in the dryer. The ticks can live for a long time in water. So what you want to do is wash them for a long time and then dry them. Make sure you get at least 10 minutes of high heat. The other thing that you can do that helps is that when you come in and you put your clothes in the dryer, you head right to the shower. And you take a shower and try and rinse them off, because oftentimes they will walk around for a while and not bite you for a period of time. And so you might have some time to wash them off before they've bitten. It's also a chance to, you know, do a tick check on your body when you're waiting to get into the shower. So perfect. I will say on the Acara side, the repellent side, there are different studies. The Consumer Reports has done a study. There are different agents. There's picaridin and permethrin. Picaridin can be put on your body, and so that is something that we recommend to people. Permethrin is something that can be put into clothes.
Excellent. Listen, you have been a tremendous help, and we really appreciate you joining us. Anytime you've got some new information, you have a key to the vault here. Just give us a shout, and we'll get you on air and talk to the folks about this. For more information, by the way, you can go to BayAreaLyme.org. That's BayAreaLyme.org, and check out the good work the folks are doing there. And Wendy, once again, I really appreciate you joining us.
Thanks for having me on.
Wendy Adams from Bay Area Lyme Foundation in California. More Journal after this. Don't you dare go away.